Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and welcome to this unique podcast. This show this week is a combination of, it's a co-production, actually, of We Coach and the Tucker Center. Tucker Center Talks, of course, is a bi-weekly, as is the We Coach podcast. And this week, our hosts have come together to talk about their report card. I have to introduce Megan Kahn. She's the CEO of We Coach, and as I say, a bi-weekly podcast that we have here at Wiz Sports, as is the Tucker Center Talks. And I'm going to throw, first of all, to Nicole Lavoie, who is the host of that show, to explain why you guys have come together for a podcast, a co-production this week. Nicole, welcome.
Thank you, Chris. This is Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport. And we are excited to be on a joint podcast with We Coach and Megan Kahn. As you know, Tucker Center Talks is where we let the data tell the story, and we talk about research, and we have some great data to share with you today. Megan?
You know, Nicole, as you know, and all of our listeners, we have industry experts every 2 weeks on this episode, and no better expert in research in women's sports than you. So we're thrilled to be here with you and Courtney. You want to go ahead and introduce Courtney, and then I would love to dive into some of this research.
Absolutely. So in any good research team, I can't do this alone. So on this podcast, I have my research assistant and current doctoral student, Courtney Boucher. Hey, Court.
Hey, Dr. Lavoie. Hi again. Thanks for having me.
And Courtney's been instrumental in quarterbacking the report card this year. In fact, she's first author this year. So I've invited her to help us let the data tell the story.
I cannot wait to dive into some of this research, which let's just even talk about now the report card in its ninth year. That blows me away that we've been doing this collaboration for 9 years. And I'm going to start with Courtney, because there's probably a lot of our listeners that are unfamiliar with the report card. Tell us about the Women in College Coaching report card.
Yeah, it's just that, as you said, Megan, it's in the ninth year, and the Women in College Coaching report card is a report card, and we assign grades A through F for NCAA Division I institutions, sports, and conferences based on the percentage of women head coaches of their women's teams.
What's the purpose of the report card? How do you use it?
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons as to why we do the report card and how we use it, kind of including to extend and complement previous research, create awareness. It stimulates conversation. It allows us to advocate for women. And it also really allows us to dive into the data, and we get to track change over time. So as Dr. Lavoie said, Tucker Center Talks is where we let the data tell the story, and the report card is one way we do that. And the data we collect for this report card helps us counter and dispel false narratives, and ultimately, really, it helps us hold decision makers accountable and unstick the current stagnation that we currently see of women in sport leadership.
So this year's report card, which was taken from the 2020-2021 sports season, tracks all Division I NCAA women's teams within the NCAA. Tell us what the key findings are this year.
Yeah, the kind of main key finding, if you had to pick one, is that 42.7% of women's Division I teams have a female head coach. And now that key finding is both good news and bad news, right? The good news is that the percentage of Division I women head coaches went up for the seventh year in a row, right? The data is trending in the right direction. The bad news, on the other hand, is that the percentage of women head coaches is still remarkably stagnant. Only the percent of these women head coaches only increased by 0.4% from 2019 to 2020. And so if we kind of continue at this rate, we won't really see any meaningful change within our lifetime. We kind of calculated it out this year. We said, well, if this is the rate at which we continue to go, we found that it would take 22 years to reach this 50% threshold of women coaching women. And if you project that even further, it would take over 143 years to reach pre-Title IX levels, above 90% of women coaching women. So there's two sides to this
point. And it's so disheartening too, when I even think about 22 years to hit that 50% mark. Because if we looked at, and I know it's not the purpose of the report to look at men's and women's sports, we have to keep in mind as we educate folks what this report is about, we're just looking at women's teams. But if you looked at the entire pool of coaching jobs, and women are only 42% right now, just on the women's side. You threw all the men's jobs in there as well. We're just such a minuscule percentage. We have so much work to do. We know it's going to take a village to do that. Thanks for sharing that, Courtney. Nicole, break it down for us by sport, by conference, by institution. Give us the lowdown.
Right. So what we like to do is run the data, and we have the leaderboard. So this year, out of the 357 Division I women's teams, 20, that's right, 20, which is 5.6% of all NCAA Division I institutions earned an A. Okay, so not many. And to earn an A on our report card, you have to have 70% or more of your head coaches that are women. So it's pretty generous grading scale, I like to say. My students would like that same grading scale, but that's a different discussion. But the good news that it was up from 18 schools last year. So it's pretty low number of A's. The F's outnumber the A's, probably double, but we did gain two schools from last year. So that's the big picture. The institutional leader, the school with the highest percentage of women head coaches of women's teams, is Florida A&M with 85.7%. They are the institutional leader. The conference leader again was the Ivy League at 55.1%. And for the first time, we have a conference, the Ivy League, that earned a B grade. We have never had a conference earn higher than a C. So that was also good news for this year. And the sport leader for this year was lacrosse at 89.6%. So we have some, you know, really good things and some history in the making. This year it was the majority of all coaches that had occupational turnover. So all the head coaching jobs that turned over in the last academic year, we had 287 coaches that turned over. And for the first time, a majority of them were women that were hired for the first time. So we had a lot of firsts, including this was the first year that we collected race data for coaches.
Yeah, I'm going to dive into race here in just a second. I want to go back to the sport leader being lacrosse, which, you know, almost 90% are women coaches. Tell us about women's wrestling, though.
Well, for the listeners, women's wrestling is an emerging NCAA sport. So there are a lot of schools that are adding women's wrestling at every level. Currently, there's only two Division I wrestling schools. And in our report card, we only have one, which had a male head coach. But there is another Division I school coming on board with a woman. So that's exciting. I think it's Sacred Heart and Presbyterian are the two D1 wrestling schools. But most of the wrestling is at Division II, III, NAIA, and JUCO. And in fact, we have on the Tucker team this summer, Jackie Davis, who is part of the team, who is very big advocate and proponent of women's wrestling. So we've learned a lot about wrestling this summer, haven't we, Court?
And same with acrobatics.
So yeah,
because as another emerging sport, their coaches are probably close to 100% women, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that for next year. So we did not include that data for this year's report card.
Yeah. And the Ivy continues to lead. They've been a leader of conferences in the past, and the institutional leader, Florida A&M, is a newbie at the top spot. Typically, mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, University of Central Florida, are they the only school that has received an A every year of the report card?
Actually, so when we first started the report cards, this thing has morphed and grown over the last 9 years. So when we first started, we only did a group of select seven Division I conferences, yeah, right, which was the Power Five, plus the Big East and the American. So when we only look at those select seven, we had University of Central Florida and University of Cincinnati are always A's, and they were again this year. So when you add in all Division I, then Florida A&M becomes the leaderboard.
Right. All right, Courtney, let's dive into race. This was huge for the Tucker Center to add this to this year's report card, especially in light of everything that we saw transpire across the nation this last year and this real focus on trying to diversify athletic department staff. So first tell us why you made that leap to collect rates this year for the first time.
Yeah, we've in the years that I've been involved with the Women College Coaching Report Card and within the Tucker Center, our team has had many, many, many nuanced discussions about if we should include race or not. This has been every year we've talked about it. And we wanted to make sure that if and when we decided to include race, that we just did it to the very best of our ability. So we didn't take this decision lightly by any means. And it builds off the work of Richard Lapchick and the Tides Institute. And ultimately we decided this year that, you know, we know it's well documented that women of color face multiple oppressions in society and in the workplace, and college coaching, it's no exception, right? And especially because women of color are underrepresented in coaching positions, and this is disproportionate to the number of, you know, the racial composition of their student athletes. We kind of came together as a team this year and thought, well, if we're going to have this larger fight for gender equality, it's really no longer useful or no longer appropriate to exclude this other aspect of women's identities. So again, as I mentioned earlier, one of the purposes of the report card is to hold decision makers accountable. And now providing hiring and retention data specific to racial demographics over time, we must start documenting and sharing those findings. And we really ultimately decided now is the time to do so.
Well, I'm so glad you did. And as we're going to talk about later in this conversation, women coaches of color is extremely important in our community as we help further getting more women of color in leadership positions, head coach positions, assistant coach positions, whatever it is. Nicole, I am probably going to already spill the beans on this when I say, share with us the abysmal data that came out on race of coaches.
Yeah, it was really no shocker going in based on some other data sets that we are aware of from the NCAA and the Tides Institute. But what our data collection showed was that women coaches of color are vastly and dramatically underrepresented as head coaches of women's teams. 7%. 7% of women coaches of color coach women's teams. So we have a lot of room for improvement there. And what we also looked at was, I wanted to know where the women were coaching. And in our report, if you dig into the deep into the data, you can see that there are some schools that are doing pretty well with women coaches of color and some sports. So where the women coaches of color are clustered, we're in basketball, volleyball, track and field, tennis, and softball. And some sports didn't have any, if very few women coaches of color. So the data tells the story. It's pretty dismal. And we have a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, especially as we think about the population of our student body and our student athletes and putting folks in position who look like them. And as we continue to sort of grow that narrative, I think it's super important.
Yeah. And I just want to add that we know from research that same identity, same sex role models matter for girls and women. And what this data tells us is that a lot of female athletes of color are rarely being coached by women that look like them, that share their same identities. And that matters for perhaps performance, certainly personal, social, and professional growth, and probably their sport experience. So this matters in for a lot of reasons. And I will just say that out of the 357 schools, 108 schools had zero coaches of color, male or female. So that's nearly one third of the sample did not have any diversity in terms of racial demographics on their coaching staffs for head coaches.
Still, when you say that, my eyes almost pop out of my head. It's almost unfathomable in today's day and age.
Yeah, looking at our social media feed yesterday, a lot of the conversation from the Twitter sphere was around the lack of schools that had no coaches of color. And, you know, that's why we do the report card, as Courtney mentioned, is to hold institutions accountable. It's not okay anymore just to have lip service about diversity and inclusion. We have the numbers. You can look. And when you have zero coaches of color, that tells a pretty compelling story for those on the job market.
I think another interesting thing to note, as we kind of just gave a lot of props to the Ivy League and reaching that B grade in terms of gender, if you look at their breakdown in terms of race and having coaches of color, they're one of the conferences that performs the worst in terms of including those coaches of color. So I think that also allows us to look at the data more holistically and in different ways and perspectives.
So let's pivot here, Megan, and I'd like to turn the questioning back to you and WeCoach in our great partnership that we've had around this report card, and get your perspective on, you know, how do you see this report card making an impact on women coaches?
Well, I think twofold, and both of them have already kind of been mentioned throughout our conversation. One, driving awareness, and two, holding those in hiring positions accountable. We know, we look at the leadership in those hiring positions, it's mainly white males. We know like hires like, and so white men are still hiring white men to coach on the women's side. And so as we look at, even from the awareness standpoint, is folks that aren't drilled in and dialed in on what's happening for women coaches, you know, too many folks still associate Title IX with giving these unbelievable opportunities to women in sports, which is true as we look at participation numbers have boomed. But as this research helps us track, since 1972, when Title IX was inactive, that percentage of women coaching women's teams has plummeted, and now we're in this stagnant period at just 42%. So it helps us create this national awareness and national dialogue. And if we're going to create change, we need a benchmark of where we are and where we need to go. And as you've laid out, especially this year in this report, of how many years it's going to take us to get to 50% and how many years it's going to take us to get back to pre-Title IX levels, that is some powerful data and some powerful numbers. And the more we can get folks to understand this disparity, and then be able to take that and hold those in hiring positions accountable. And it does tell a very compelling story as we look at those in the job market, like you just mentioned. So for our community of women coaches who are continually to seek new employment and or maybe being recruited to become a coach at a new school, they can use this report card and just get a quick snapshot of, well, how inclusive is the department? How many other women are head coaches there? How many women are assistant coaches? That tells a very compelling story when they're just looking at data of those numbers.
Yeah. And what's interesting is when we'll be putting out this infographic as sort of the days roll out, we officially launched the report card on July 12th. But we have an infographic. So the 357 Division I programs, 20 of those schools had A's. Okay. So those 20 athletic directors, when you look at their gender and racial breakdown, is where it really gets interesting, because those 20 athletic directors, 10 out of the 20, half, 50% of those athletic directors are women or people of color. So what that tells us is that when you have a woman or a person of color in athletic leadership, you are much more likely to have an A grade. So we have a saying that diversity begets diversity, and the leadership absolutely matters.
I think we should pull a clip of exactly what you just said, and we should just run that over and over and over again on our social medias, because that's a very, very powerful statement.
We like to think so, and that's why we get the data. It's not my opinion. It's the fact. What do you think's the most surprising to you with this data over the years, Megan?
Well, I think I would say two things. The surprising and disheartening thing is this male's pace at which we're trying to move the needle. And so I feel like there's this narrative around women in sports that we're having the same conversation over and over and over again, and only seeing minuscule improvements. And I don't want to take lightly that we increased 4% this year, but that is such a small percentage when apparently we have a lot of stakeholders that have been continuing to say this needs to change, but we're not seeing the action behind that being changed quick enough. And so, you know, it's probably, I would say, frustrating for those of us that pour our heart and soul into this every day and want to will the change to happen faster. You know, it's going to take a village to change. We certainly, you and me and the work of the Tucker Center and the work of We Coach, we can't change this single-handedly. It's going to take a village to change this and to truly make progress and moving the needle. And then the second thing of that is looking at women of color, and only 7% and almost a third of our D1 schools don't even have a woman of color head coach. There is significant change that needs to happen around that.
Yeah. And we like to say that this is a benchmark for improvement, and there's certainly a lot of room for improvement with this data. And, you know, I know that you at WeCoach have a new initiative called We Amplify that is around lifting up and supporting women and coaches of color. So tell us about that.
You know, We Amplify, I've done a lot of amazing things in my time with WeCoach. We've been able to create a lot of super beneficial programs. I think We Amplify holds a special place in my heart because it's so important to our entire community of coaches. And so it was started as an initiative last summer after Black Lives Matter and Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and everyone sort of using sports as a platform to help create change. And it really does allow us to amplify the voices, the presence and experience of women of color in our coaching community. What we've done is open it up to folks even outside of the WeCoach community, recognizing that there's a need for this kind of connection among women coaches of color. And we need to provide support and connections, and then use those platforms to drive change. And hopefully, you know, the folks that are participating in that initiative just continues like a groundswell to grow over time. And as we know, this industry, it's not necessarily always about who you know, but it's about who knows you, right? And so being able to provide connection and engagement opportunities for those women of color is really important in this initiative.
It really is so important because we know from the data that one of the blame the women narratives is that, well, women don't apply. So I want to hire a woman, but they don't apply. Well, what you just pointed out, what the data also says, is that it's not about applying. It's about who you know and who's in your network. I always use the example of Mark Coyle, who's our AD here at Minnesota. And, you know, when Mark Coyle hired our women's basketball coach was Lindsay Whalen, I'm sure he wasn't going on monster.com and wondering who his applicants were. Right. He went out and he picked up the phone and he recruited in his network and in the Minnesota Gopher network. And so, you know, this is another reason why the data is important.
Absolutely. And let me piggyback on that. You know, one of the things in our WeCoach community, we have conference-wide memberships, right? And so if you look at this year's data and you see the bottom, the last two in all of Division I, the Big 12 Conference and the Horizon League. And those folks, we are able to use this data and have dialogue and conversation with those conference members. And they're asking us, well, how do we better support our women coaches? What resources can we provide them? And that dialogue has then resulted in conference-wide memberships. So specifically those two conferences are, you know, one of several other conferences or two of other several conferences that have conference-wide memberships for a significant number of the women coaches across their conference.
Yeah, and I get a lot of calls from conference commissioners and athletic directors with those same questions. And I think with the athletic directors, I want to kick it back to Court for a minute because her research has been focused on an offshoot of the Women College Coaching Report Card. As we also track the AD hiring trends over the last 9 years. We don't publish who's at the leaderboard and who's at the bottom because that might be political suicide for us, but we do have the data. But Court, I want to kick it to you and ask you, what is the most surprising, interesting finding out of your research about athletic directors' hiring of head coaches of women's teams?
Yeah, as you said, part of my research is looking at who's being hired and who's the person doing the hiring. And we have that data over time. And I think that you also alluded to this earlier when talking about the A schools, who earns an A on a report card and who's in charge, who's the athletic director at those schools. And we see that this diversity begets diversity. And in my research, I've also found that when you have a female athletic director, they hire female head coaches a majority of the time. Now, there's not a lot of female athletic directors, but when they're in those positions, they utilize their kind of power and privilege to continue to hire women. So I think that alludes to two things. One is that we need more women in those athletic director positions and in sport leadership positions in general. But also where we're at currently is we don't have many women occupying them. So I think that also suggests that male allies are going to continue to be key people to continue to hire women.
Yeah, I mean, I won't name names here, but we have a couple ADs who over 9 years have had 17 opportunities to hire a head coach of a women's team. Some of them have hired a majority and some of them have hired very few. So if you want to look at male allyship and put your money where your mouth is, those that are hiring women, we're watching. And those who haven't hired women, we're also watching. So just be on note. So as we wrap up here, any other final thoughts, Megan or Courtney?
The only other thing I would say is, you know, as we look at moving the needle, we also have to look at who's in the pipeline. So who makes up our assistant coaches? Is it predominantly men? Is it predominantly women? Are there women of color who are getting opportunities?
Yeah, I think mostly that this is a really important project to both We Coach and the Tucker Center, and it's really great and an honor to be a part of it. And hopefully we can kind of continue the tagline that you use, Dr. Lavoie and Wellesley Center for Women does, is a world that's good for women is a world that's good for everyone. And right now we're kind of piggybacking on this cultural shift of momentum around women's sports, and hopefully that can continue to be a catalyst in changing the current landscape and underrepresentation for women's sport leaders.
Yeah, and this idea as we wrap up here that you mentioned, Megan, is this idea of creating a culture that values and supports women coaches, including assistant coaches, so they stay in the game. Because the year before last year's report card, we looked at all positions from grad assistants through assistant coaches to head coaches. And we find that assistant coach is that's where the leaky pipeline is. That's the critical zone of attrition, where we go from a majority of women assistant coaches. By the time they move from assistant to head, now we have a minority of women as head coaches. So that is really the target of opportunity for all of us to devote resources and program to keep these assistant coaches in the game. That's a wrap for this special podcast edition of Tucker Center Talks and the We Coach podcast. You can find the show notes with links and resources for this episode at wisports.com, including a link to the latest Women in College Coaching report card. Look for the Tucker Center Talks or We Coach podcast under the Listen tab, where you'll find more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thank you for listening and helping us turn up the volume on women's sport. That's a wrap. I'm Nicole Lavoie, the host for Tucker Center Talks.
And that's a wrap for me on this special episode of the We Coach podcast. And I'm going to put a plug here, because you just talked about that leaky pipeline, which our mentor program is all about combating that leaky pipeline. Our applications go live for the We Coach mentor program on July 29th.